Good. Good. Okay, good morning. It's good to not see you or to see you or to see you in the comment section. I'm going to say thank you, Heather, for leading that prayer. That was really helpful, and it leads really nicely into where we're going to go this morning. I'm going to start today by saying that this has been a really difficult sermon to prepare. Some of you may not know this about me, but I actually come from a family of immigrants. My father comes from a town called Jalandhar in the north of India, and he and his family, when he was very young, moved across to the UK to London in, I think, the 70s, 60s, I'm sure they'll correct me, and they've lived here ever since. As I was preparing to speak and looking at everything that was happening in the world, and the different tensions that we're seeing, the conversations that we're seeing, the really tragic events that happened in Glasgow city centre, the death of George Floyd, and the ongoing conversation around racism and justice and inequality in our society that's happened since then, I was really reflecting on how to speak into that and how to preach on that effectively, and that was challenging because it touches so close to my heart and to the heart of my family and to our place in the world. I'm not saying that to be all woe is me, look at the preacher having a hard time. I'm saying that because I think it's really important that when we're speaking about stuff like this, which is complicated and difficult, which affects all of us, which shapes the society that we live in and the world, shapes the world around us, I think it's really important that we can speak honestly about the things that we feel and the things that we experience, and the way that that shapes our heart and shapes the things that we find important. Because as Christians, our job is to navigate through that and to find Jesus. To find Jesus and to understand the world the way he sees it, and to respond in the way that he wants us to respond. And that's how we as Christians navigate situations like this and times like this. I'm going to try and provide a wee bit of guidance towards that end today. I'm going to read from Isaiah chapter 2, just 4 verses. I'm going to reflect a wee bit on what I think they may mean for us today and how they can help us to address the things that are around us and to understand how best we can respond to them. So this is Isaiah chapter 2, verses 1 to 4. The word that Isaiah, son of Amos, saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. In the days to come, the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established as the highest of the mountains, and shall be raised above the hills. All the nations shall stream to it. Many people shall come and say, "Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may teach us his ways, and that we may walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth instruction, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He shall judge between the nations, and shall arbitrate for many peoples. They shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore." Now, this is another one of those passages that you've probably heard before at least once, or at least bits of it before. It's a passage which is quite popular in church worship. It's influenced various songs and various other bits and pieces. It's influential throughout the history of the church. And you can see why, right? It's quite uplifting. It's kind of clean and hopeful and joyful and speaks to a really optimistic, in a sense, view of the future. It's the sort of thing that would make a really, really good Instagram post over a sunset and get you lots of likes. And actually, that's how I came to choose this passage to speak on today. I saw a friend of mine that posted it on social media, and he talked about how it was one of the passages that we see recorded a wee bit in the early church and used in worship in the early church a little bit. And he was asking the question, well, what does that tell us about the way the early church saw the world and the things that were important to them? And so it was a lonely afternoon in lockdown, and I was bored, so I scrolled through the comment section and had a wee look at the discussion. And I saw another gentleman post and say that he thought it seemed like quite a hopeful passage, and it suggested that hope was really important to the early church, and that was where the discussion left off. And on one hand, I want to say that that's quite a good answer. It's clearly a hopeful passage. You know, it talks about hope in the future. It's clearly quite optimistic. But on the other hand, it doesn't feel like a very complete answer. Because I think if we're going to talk about hope, we need to talk not just about having hope, but about what we have hope in, what we hope for. And I think that's quite true of this passage, because yes, it's hopeful and it's optimistic and it shares a kind of a peaceful vision of the future, but it also, as you go through it, tells us a lot about the way that the prophet sees God and the way that he sees the world and the things that he hopes God is going to do in the world in quite specific terms. And so it starts in the opening passages in verse 2, where the prophet describes a vision of the world which is gathered under the authority of God, as the mountain of the Lord's house is lifted high, higher than all the other mountains. And it tells us that all the peoples of the earth stream to the house of the Lord to receive teaching and instruction, so that they may live in the way of God. And so it's an image of the world where Jesus is and God is raised high above the world, that they're in a position of authority, that all the nations acknowledge the authority of who God is. And they all worship him, and they all seek to be obedient to him. And I think that sort of hope is something we're quite familiar with in church. You know, it's what we talk about when we send people off in mission. You know, go and make disciples of all nations. We even have it in our songs, every knee shall bow and every tongue shall confess. You know, it's an idea and an image and a hope that we're quite familiar with. But the passage doesn't draw the line there. The passage goes on. And so in verse 4, it says that he shall judge between the nations and shall arbitrate for many peoples. And I think this is one of the occasions where we benefit a little bit from thinking about the history and the time period surrounding these statements. Because on one hand, some of this feels very similar to today's context. And on another hand, I think there's some differences. And I think it's easy to read this and not understand the full weight of what it meant at the time. See, we live today in what some people will call the global age. So, which means that when we talk about politics, when we talk about nations, we're talking about really big things. So if you go on your favourite news site and you flip to the politics section, and you drop down the tab, it will talk about really big things going on between giant world superpowers. So trade deals between China and America, and Russia doing all sorts of things to the internet in different countries. And it'll talk about Brexit and the European Union and trying to hash out a trade deal and everything else that comes in the aftermath of that. And that's really big stuff, right? That feels sometimes very separate from where we are. It feels very distant to me, like I'm this small little bloke living in the west of Glasgow. Yes, the west of Glasgow. And this is big stuff, like nations and governments and armies and all sorts of stuff that's way above my pay grade. But that's not quite the same as the context of this passage. See, from the vantage point of the prophet, the nations he's referring to are probably Israel and Israel's neighbours, which is a much smaller, more close-to-home image of politics and relationships between people. And it's especially significant when we realise that a good deal of the Old Testament is spent, particularly the early Old Testament, is spent describing the birth of these different nations and where the tensions between them come from. So, for example, the Israelites, around about this time period, I think slightly beforehand, have had some ongoing disputes with the people called the Edomites. And if you trace that conflict back, it goes right the way to Jacob and Esau. The Israelites are the descendants of Jacob, and the Edomites are the descendants of Esau. And so when we're talking about the tensions between nations, and the conflict between nations that God's meant to mediate, we're not just talking about great big politics. We're talking about the tension between me and you, between us and them. And the tensions that go back to our grandfathers and the great-grandfathers, and the things that they did to each other that shape the world that we live in now. And that feels really relevant to the current situation, right? Because when we talk about racism, we're not just talking about great big politics things, and we're not just talking about how one person sees another person and how that affects the way they may get on. We're talking about how generations of abuse have shaped our society. How things like the slave trade that go back 400 years or more shape the world that we live in today and cause things to still happen as a result of what happened then. When we're talking about, when the passage describes a God who mediates judgment between the nations, it's talking about a God who can delve into those generational conflicts, those wounds between people, and who can bring healing to those things that go back a long time. And so this is really important to us. It's also important because it gives us a glimpse into the sort of world that the prophet hoped to see. And bear with me, that's really important because it's going to help us to see Jesus differently. See, when Jesus shows up in the New Testament and he calls himself the Messiah, what he's saying to the people around him is that he's the answer to all of these hopes. He takes the thousands of years of struggles and conflicts and laments and longings and yearnings and hopes that's contained in the Old Testament, and he says, look, here, I'm the answer to this. I'm the answer to everything you've been hoping for. Which is why when you get your Bible, you get, don't just get this bit that talks about Jesus, but you get all of this much larger bit that talks about the time before Jesus. See, this is here so we understand how we're meant to see Jesus. It's there so we don't miss a trick. It's there so that when Jesus comes and he describes himself as the hope of the world, we understand the full meaning of that. So these words that the prophet wrote here are a hope. But as Christians, we are uniquely privileged because we live on the other side of the cross. We live on the other side of the thing that Jesus did. When he said he was the hope of the world, the thing that he accomplished. And so in a sense, we live in the realization of the thing that these people hoped for. That hope began to be realized when Jesus died on the cross and rose again and conquered death. It was realized further, this hope was realized further in the early church when Peter began to share the gospel to Gentile communities, where he took the good news of Christ that at that point had belonged to the Jewish people and he said, no, this goes outside of our walls. And he took it out to the Gentile communities that surrounded them. If he hadn't done that, me and you wouldn't be in church today. Most of us don't come from Jewish descent. I am a Gentile as they come. I can only be here and preach and talk to you because of the work that Peter did in that space. And that hope was realised further more recently in our history in the 18th and 19th centuries in the missionary movements that went out of Europe when people said we're going to take the good news of Christ and we're going to share it to all the nations so every tribe, every tongue, every colour and every creed could come to know the fullness of who Jesus was. And more recently still, less than 100 years ago, this hope was realised in the civil rights movement when churches that were segregated opened their doors and black Christians could walk up and worship next to white Christians in the place that Jesus had always had prepared for them. And so I look at our world today and I look at the tensions that are around us. I see the things that are happening in the world and I feel the tensions. And I wonder where we might see this hope realised again today. See, just give me a moment. See, See, to be the church means that we are called to live towards this hope. It means that we are at God's disposal as he brings these things about in the world. We belong to him, we don't belong to ourselves, and he gets to use us however he wishes. And so, as the church, we are active participants in the realization of the hope which the prophet describes here. And so as we respond to the tensions in our society, as we address the issue of racism and the way that it has shaped us and our families and our congregations and our world and our politics, I want to ask us, what sort of world are we helping to create right now? See, Jesus is there in the midst of this conflict, and his heart is what his heart has always been, which is to adjudicate between the nations, between me and you, between us and them, to heal the generational wounds which have shaped our society. And as a church, I want to ask, are we willing to partner with him in that? Are we willing to do the hard reflection on the way that racism has shaped us and our church community? On the places where we benefit from racism today? On the places where we've turned a blind eye to it in our politics and our communities. On the places where we've been negligent and we've not fully understood the struggles of our neighbours. Are we willing to reflect on that, and are we willing to do the work to see change? To live into the hope of Jesus. To follow him into that space. And I ask that because really, honestly, I look at the world and I look at the things that surround us, and I think about the struggle of me and my family and how that struggle pales in comparison to so many people in our world. And I want to know in 20 years' time when I look back at this that I didn't let this time pass me by. That we as a church didn't let this time pass us by. But that we were willing to pursue Jesus and his will for reconciliation. So Jesus, please come and meet us where we are today. Jesus, we know that lots of this we don't get right. Come and teach us what it means to really serve you, to really live into your hope, to be fully obedient to you. We surrender to your will.